Gary, welcome to the program, and thanks for being with us.
Good morning, Rick. Thank you.
Gary, sort of hot off the presses are the recent FCAT scores that were just released last week, as well as the close of the legislative session earlier this month. I'd like to talk about both to start today's program. What about the FCAT scores that were released just last week?
Yeah, partial scores were released. We released writing for the entire state, and then we also released third grade FCAT results for math and reading. And overall, I would say that looking at those scores across the state, that we were sort of flat. We didn't give up any gains that we've made, but overall, we're a little bit disappointed, I'd say, that we didn't have increases, but we didn't retrench at all.
Well, listen, you're listening to Policy Matters on WJCT. If you'd like to join our conversation, please give us a call at 549-2937, 549-2937. And we're visiting with Gary Chartrand, the chairman of the State Board of Education. Gary, one of the things I noticed in the FCAT scores last week was scores of third graders in reading, a real big issue because certainly one of the big policy changes in the last decade or so has been sort of the end of social promotion for third graders and this emphasis on reading. What do these scores mean and what will happen to third graders in the state as a result of these scores?
Yeah, third and fourth grade performance in reading and math, as I just said, was actually flat. We didn't give up any gains that we achieved the year before, but we didn't increase. About 18% of our students in third grade failed to reach level two on the FCAT, which is required to move on to promotion to the fourth grade. And so those 18% of our students in third grade are facing some choices. One, be held back. Two, go to summer school and take intensive reading. And there's also some other ways that actually the teacher and the parents can work together to look at their portfolio of reading across what they did that year in school and petition to see if they could move their children into fourth grade. It was 19% this year. Last year was 18%, and the year before was 18%. So it's pretty historic, pretty much right on the number. Of the 19% or of the 18%, about 7% over the last 2 years have actually been held back. Did not go to the summer school or put their portfolio together and work with their teachers to convince the state authorities that they could move on to fourth grade.
You know, Gary, it seems to me there are so many different issues in education, so many different subjects being addressed, but honestly, and I'm not a professional educator, a K-12, but it seems to me that reading is so fundamental that this policy of trying to assess where students are early and this sort of early literacy initiative that has been part of the big policy landscape for the last decade is such a critical part to improving public education in Florida. Can you comment on that, the emphasis on reading and intervention?
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the laws that was passed a number of years ago was no more social promotion for third graders, and I think it's a great law. Some of the more recent studies that have been developed on showing us why third grade reading is so important. When they looked at I think it was about 2,500 high school dropouts, 88% of those dropouts could not read in the third grade proficiently. So if we don't catch it early, that's what we'll end up getting is more high school dropouts, and certainly that's not what we want.
No, I think the emphasis, that policy change has been a big one. Of course, next year at this time, we'll be looking at something a little bit different. We're going to be making a transition next year from FCAT to the Florida standards. How about describing the Florida standards, or some people refer to this as Common Core. We can also talk about those differences. But how about talking about the Florida standards and what we'll be transitioning into in the state of Florida for next year?
Sure. Well, first of all, the new Florida standards, or if you will, the Common Core that people refer to it as, and quite frankly, what we did is we looked at the Common Core, we took the Common Core, and I think the governor really did a good thing. He listened to the people. He had three major meetings around the state to listen to people. He opened up a separate website to ask for comments, and then we hired a separate research firm to come in and look at all the comments, and we looked at Common Core, and we did make some adjustments. So we added calculus back in, cursive writing came back in. We actually dropped a couple standards. So the new Florida standards are, I would say, you know, 94% Common Core. But there really are standards because we went through and vetted them to make sure that we felt good about our state and the standards that we were putting in place for Florida standards.
If you have a question for Gary Chartrand or you'd like have a comment, please give us a call at 549-2937, 549-2937. You're listening to Policy Matters here on WJCT 89.9. Gary, I think this has certainly been a big discussion nationwide. Can you give us both a national perspective as well as the local perspective on what this means nationally?
Yeah, well, you know, people don't realize this, but back in 2009, it was the governors across the country that got together through the National Governors Association and opted into this idea of having higher standards across the country and having them common so that in third grade in Florida, what we're learning or what we expect our kids to know is the same thing in North Dakota or in Massachusetts. So as people become mobile and they move from grade to grade, that they're at the same level. And the research, all the research that I've read is that the standards, when they looked at the standards of each state, what was in place and the new standards, that 35 out of the 45 states, the standards were absolutely higher, more rigorous than what was in place in 35 of those states. In the other 10, they were sort of equal to. So I think what we've done for our country is we've raised standards across the board. And I think that's a good thing for our children so that they're ready to compete in a global environment.
Well, Gary, we have several phone calls waiting to hear from us, or questions or comments. And we have Bill from Mandarin. Bill, you're on the air. Do you have a question or comment for Gary Chartrand?
Yes, I do. I've been listening to this ongoing debate about how to make kids smarter since the 1950s, I guess. And the problem I'm having is this matching of one's IQ, that is God's given power to think and do that kind of stuff, with an attempt to educate the kid. And some things are very disconcerting to them. I'll hear a lot of guys say, okay, we want everybody to go to college. We're going to do everything we can to go to college. Well, God didn't give every kid enough brain power to do that. What kind of matching are we making with this adoption of the national core standard to make sure a kid does get educated, even though he may not be smart enough, sadly, to go beyond the 10th grade?
Well, Bill, thank you very much for your question. Gary, what about Bill's question regarding those kids maybe who have a different path in mind?
Yeah, well, first of all, I'm a believer that all kids can learn. And everybody comes in at a different level into the school system. Unfortunately, some kids don't have the parental guidance and don't show up as ready as others. But I could point to the Kipp School right here in Jacksonville as an example of when we started in fifth grade, most of the kids came in reading at second grade level, and today they're reading on grade level. So I take the approach that all kids can learn, but I agree with the caller in that all kids aren't going to go to college. And so these standards are career and college ready. So they're not just college ready, but they're career ready. And there are certain skills that you need. If you don't go to college, like if you want to go into the military, you've got to be able to pass a test to get into the military, and we need to make sure that these kids are taught the standards that we're putting in place.
Gary, thank you. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a call at 549-2937, 549-2937. We have a comment or question from Zachary. Zachary, do you have a question for Gary?
Yes. I actually grew up here in Duval taking the FCAT and all that, and I was wondering why mentioned cursive writing was introduced back in the Florida standards. I was wondering what the reason behind that is, especially, you know, because I had to learn for third grade and never used it again afterwards, even though they say, you know, everything's going to have to be in cursive. And it just seems totally useless now, especially in our digital age when most things are, you know, text.
Zachary, thank you for your question. I will tell you, just before the program, I was mentioning this to Gary myself, that some of my children, quite frankly, They're not using cursive very much anymore. I certainly learned it, but Zachary asked a very good question because it was reintroduced back into the standards. You want to comment on this, Gary, on this cursive writing question?
You know, it's a good question, and you brought it up earlier, Rick, and I need to do a little bit more research in terms of giving you the right answer because I don't want to misquote in terms of why it was put back in. My guess is that that the demand came from those 19,000 comments from the website that was opened up. I'm not absolutely sure on that, but I think that's where, because it wasn't part of Common Core and it wasn't put back in until we opened it up across the state to listen to the people.
It is interesting, Zachary, not only cursive writing, I noticed in looking at some of these standards that keyboarding and technology has found its way into the curriculum, which is a very dramatic change from when I was in school. Gary, any comments on that piece of the curriculum, because Common Core, I guess, is really just, as you talked about earlier, reading and math, or English and math. Is that correct?
English, language, arts, and math.
And math.
Right.
But also there's this, when you look at some of the discussion behind it, there's a discussion of keyboarding and also technology. Can you comment on that for us?
Yeah, well, there's also, in addition to the Common Core of the Florida Standards, there's also the Florida Sunshine State Standards that are still in effect. So, for instance, all the other end-of-course exams, civics, biology, all those other standards are still being put in place. So the only new standards are the ones on English language and on math.
Well, if you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a call at 549-2937, 549-2937. This is Rick Mullaney with the Public Policy Institute of Jacksonville University, and you're listening to Policy Matters on WJCT. Gary, as we transition into Florida Standards next year, what can students and teachers expect around the state of Florida?
Right. So we've been teaching the Common Core standards actually K through 3 over the last 3 years they've been implemented. And fourth grade through 10th grade, we've been teaching a blended. So we taught the Florida Sunshine State standards in addition to the Common Core standards. Next year, we'll be fully implementing the new Florida standards and teaching to those standards across all grades. And the new assessment will be given in the spring of next year. And that new assessment, you may have read, the commissioner went through a detailed process and picked American Institute for Research to put that assessment together. And that is work underway. In fact, in the month of June, there'll be sample questions that'll be out. You can go to the website at the Department of Education and look at those sample questions. So we're mobilizing our department with the accountability of making sure that that test or that assessment accurately measures the standards that are being put in place in the spring of 2015.
Gary, we have several calls. We have Ed, you're on the air and have a question for Mr. Chartran.
Yes, thanks, Rick. Thanks, Gary, for both of your service to our community. Looking at the big picture, we've got portions of our community, significant segments of our community, where the kids live in neighborhoods that are not safe. There's a lot of violence and crime. And so what can the education system do to accommodate that or respond to that or somehow help that problem until we start to make progress in those areas? We're going to be working uphill, I think, just trying to provide a better education.
Ed, thank you very much for your question. You know, Gary, Ed raises a great question about children coming up in disadvantaged neighborhoods. They're violent and they're crime. Just a little anecdote. My daughter has just finished up her second year of Teach for America, teaching in Memphis in inner city schools. And she says, and she has this challenge, and she told me that despite the violence, despite the problems they face, that for her, and she teaches 11th grade English, the key is reading. She said the challenge she has is when students come to her class, they can't read. And so in response to Ed's question, I just thought I'd mention it goes back to something similar, which is this fundamental skill set, whether you're on a college path or a career path, this fundamental skill set. But what about Ed's question, which is a really good one?
Yeah, it is a good one. And look, I think all our children deserve the right to go to a safe school. And certainly the Department of Education, and from where I sit at the board level, we adhere to that, and we want to make sure that happens. The issue at hand that Ed's talking about is a local control issue, so it's not a state issue. So our local superintendent here, Nikolai Vitti, is responsible for making sure that all his schools are safe. There are funds that are available that can help him do that. Whether or not how he decides to do that, whether he's putting guidance counselors in the school or whether he's actually putting police officers in the school, that's up to him to make sure that that we provide a safe environment for our schools. But more importantly is not so much just the safe environment, although that's critically important, is to make sure that we have good classroom management, because when you have a disruptive class, then it impedes the learning for all our kids. So good classroom management, again, that's also making sure that we have good, effective teachers in the classroom that understand classroom management to make sure that the proper discipline and order is in place.
This morning, we're visiting with Gary Chartran, the chairman of the State Board of Education, talking about education policy issues, and we have a phone call from Derek. Do you have a question for Mr. Chartrand?
This is Julie.
Oh, excuse me, Julie. You have a question for Mr. Chartrand?
Well, I do. First of all, I have met both Mr. Chartrand and Mr. Mullaney, and I know them to be terrific public servants and very well-intentioned people. And I want to say that as a public education advocate, I applaud accountability and standards-based education because I've seen it work here in Jacksonville at several schools that have turned around. My question has to do with the other prong, if you will, of educational reform, which is privatization. And here we are about 15 years into the privatization experiment in Florida, and we really don't have any evidence that it's doing a better job for our students, particularly for our most vulnerable students who need the most catching up, if you will. I'm wondering if the gentleman would comment on, you know, how long do we let this experiment go on before we take a breath and say, wow, you know, privatization really has not helped?
Julie, thank you very much for your question. Gary, what about Julie's question regarding privatization in Florida? And I assume she's talking about some of the school choice issues and charter schools and vouchers and related sorts of privatization. Networks.
Sure. Hi, Julie. I happen to disagree with those that feel like the charter school movement is a bad thing. I believe in choice. I think the more choices we have as Americans, the more free we are. And I think that a child that's stuck in a broken system, that lives in poverty, has no mobility, that doesn't have choice, is not a good thing for America and for our citizens of America. When you say privatization, that also concerns me because charter schools are not private schools. Charter schools are public schools, and that point has to be driven home. They are funded by public tax dollars. The money follows the children. They have to be authorized. They have to be have curriculum that passes the test. They have to take the FCAT. And I know in my own particular situation, full disclosure, I'm on the board of the KIPP school, and our KIPP school is doing a fantastic job. Those choices, I think, are great for our kids. In fact, the consumer, the parents, are telling us how great it is because we have a waiting list of 600 people. 600 students want to come to KIPP, and we can't fit them in right now because we just can't grow fast enough. So monopolies are not good. I don't think monopolies are good for anything. I think competition drives innovation and productivity, and I am a big school choice advocate. Having said that, I think that a bad school is a bad school. So whether it's a charter school or not, the right work has to be done around improving those schools, or we need to close those schools. I do believe that schools like KIPP and high-impact charter schools that are working in the inner city are a blessing to our children.
I want to thank Julie for her question, and Gary, I want to thank you for your response. And before we leave for today, I do want to give Mr. Chartrand an opportunity to talk a little bit about education reform and what it has meant in performance here in Florida, because we're a little short on time.
Sure, Rick. Obviously, the name of the show is Policy Matters, and policy does matters. And a couple of things that I'd like to comment on is that actually the state of Florida has done a remarkable job over the last 14 years. You know, we were right at the bottom of the 50 states 14 years ago. We were about a 50% graduation rate. Today, we are looked at and we were ranked at 7th in the country last year in terms of public education. We've closed the achievement gap. We've closed the poverty gap. We've closed the gap between whites and African Americans. Our graduation rate has increased by 16 points. So a lot of good things have happened in Florida in public education, and I think it's a lot due to some of the policies that were put in place. And I'd like to cover just a few of the policies that I think really do matter. One, we were the first state in the country to do free voluntary pre-K. We have 184,000 kids in that are four-year-olds that get free tuition paid in the mostly in the private sector, about 7,000 providers across the state. We can't start too early. We got to make sure that our kids show up to kindergarten ready to learn. Second was ending the social promotion for third grade. I think that's been a terrific policy. Third would be school choice. We have 585 charter schools in the state of Florida, and I think that choice element has been positive. Those are public schools. They're not private schools. They are creating competition for our districts and also innovation and productivity in the school environment. And then I think probably the most important one is the accountability bills that have been passed. So making sure that we have high standards, that we measure against those standards. And then one of the things that Jeb Bush put in place was our grading system, the A through F grading system, which clearly delineates and explains to the public how your public, how your neighborhood school is doing. And then lastly would be making sure that we continue to look at teacher effectiveness. And there's been bills passed. As you know, tenure was eliminated 2 years ago. All new teachers are on a one-year contract. And I think that's a positive thing. So a lot of great policies that have been put in place in the state of Florida. And quite frankly, they're working.